that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience. And that, that's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it? Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S. Order now at Acura.com.
True or false? Walmart has eye care. True. Stop by Walmart to save and browse top designer frames right where you already shop. And they accept most insurance. Welcome to Easy Eye Care. Welcome to your Walmart.
Some people like to deep clean every Saturday morning. I prefer to spend a few minutes every day keeping things fresh with Lysol. Lysol's brand new day disinfecting wipes conveniently tackle surfaces, including remotes, tablets, and smartphones, killing 99.9% of viruses and bacteria with a fragrance that feels like a tropical getaway for your senses. Don't just clean, Lysol clean.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello, Rank Squad, and welcome to Ranks FC. It's your favourite football podcast, back with another excerpt from our Monday post box, which goes out on our Patreon every week. We discuss all of the weekend's action, guided by our patrons who ask questions every week. This week's excerpt is all about the Manchester derby and the effect that Phil Foden had on that game, where it leaves his player of the year chances, his chances of starting for England at the Euros, and all the rest of it. Let's get stuck in. Let's start with the Manchester derby. Ben Golly says, Phil Foden, take a bow. I don't know how many times I've written those words this season, but it's an awful lot. Surely he's the front runner for player of the season. In the absence of King Kev, he's really stepped up and consistently performed in the big moments, dragging City, kicking and screaming through games. Of all the names at the top performing clubs, he's been the only one who's been a consistent performer the whole season and repeatedly offering performances like on Sunday. Chris says, given his chances of winning multiple titles this year, does Foden have to be considered in the conversation for the Ballon d'Or? Arguably the best form player in the Premier League. Return Jai says, Foden PFA player of the year when? Clack Toe says, should Foden start over Saka for England at the Euros? I know what Clack's doing here. We're going to come back to that. And Cole Collins says, Phil Foden is unreal. Continues to come up with the big goals in games where City need him most. 18 goals and 10 assists in all competitions this year. Could he be the most critical piece in City's puzzle?
They've got too many critical pieces. There's not going to be one. I'm just glad that we're seeing an English player actually fulfill his potential within the Premier League. I mean, Phil Foden has been a sensation since the moment he stepped into the league. I remember when we were at Bleacher Report speaking to the coach that kind of found him in his early days at Stockport he was living. I remember writing a really interesting piece with him about like the process and like trying to make sure he doesn't go and join Man United and like making sure that he does actually live up to the hype, because there was a lot of hype from a very young age with Phil Foden. He's played for England at every youth level. Obviously now a full international. He's playing for probably the best Premier League side we've ever seen. He's 23, he's made over 150 league appearances for them. He's won everything he could win at that level. and yet still feels like we probably haven't seen the best of him. And I think that that's what is most exciting about Foden. This, like, as obviously you get the adoration when you get the goals. Sometimes that's frustrating because it shouldn't be that Phil Foden necessarily needs the goals to deserve the acclaim that he's going to get throughout his life. But I guess that's the way of football, isn't it? I guess also when you score an equaliser like that, you're going to get it. The England conversation is a very different one from what we see at club level, because England don't play like Man City. England don't have a coach that is as brave or as bold as Pep Guardiola. And
few are, but, to be fair.
Few are, but like you should be saying to Phil Foden, where do you want to play? Where do you need to play to be at your best in an England team? Take that and then build out from there. You're like, okay, so Foden wants to play there. Kane's going to be playing there. Right, I'll have a chat. Rice is going to have to play deep. I'll see where Bellingham thinks he would best benefit us. And then anyone else, John Stones is obviously a shoo-in at the back. Anyone else, we're just going to have to take it from there. And you're all going to have to accept that you fit around these four or five players. And Foden should be one of those four or five players. And so far, it hasn't really been the case. So a tricky one for him and Southgate, when it shouldn't really be, in my opinion. He's just absolutely sensational. Like, he's the way that he controls a ball is kind of Messi-like, in the fact that he has those little touches and such confidence. This is what I love about Foden, and it's very un-English, is that he doesn't seem to feel any pressure. And this is another reason I want him playing more for England. He takes it all as like it's expected that he's playing on this stage. It's not like a big deal. Like, oh my God, I'm playing in front of all these people. Oh my God, I'm taking a penalty for England. Oh my God, I've just scored a massive goal in a Manchester derby. Like, that's what was expected of him all along in his head, as yeah, well as everybody else's. And he doesn't have a problem with delivering in those circumstances. And that's what I love so much about this player. There are very few Englishmen that actually play with that. And even when we've had players that do live up to the hype, look, Beckham, Rooney, they still had that. Well, they'd just lose the plot, wouldn't they? They'd get red cards and they'd let the moments get to them. I don't think that's going to happen with Foden. I don't think it will.
Famous last words. I know, I get that. But look, I know this seems incredibly simplistic, but the basics that you look at and you go, well, if England are going to play with three midfielders, you play Rice 6, Bellingham 8, Foden 10, right? That feels like the way. And look, Clark's question is, should he start over Saka for England? And I know where Clark's going with this, because he's going to say that Jared Bowen should start on the right flank. I don't think that's going to happen. Clack is a resident West Ham fan. So, and we'll come back to, you know, to the West Ham question that comes on later on. But
bad timing for Jared Bowen if he wants that role.
Yeah, exactly. Saka's in the form of his life. So it does feel like one of those where Saka should start on the right, because he is, I think, you know, the best, well, probably one of the best right wings in the world. And there is, I think having Jared Bowen in the squad is a fair question, but I don't think you can leave Saka out. And I don't think Foden will want to play on the right anyway. So that conversation becomes slightly moot. The question is Southgate going to want a little bit more solidity in that midfield? He always kind of has gone for that. Rice, Bellingham, and, you know, one other, but whoever that other is probably looks a little bit more like a defensive profile than what Phil Foden offers. So in which case you go, well, England's left wing a problem. Marcus Rashford made his case yesterday with the goal, but actually in terms of a all-round performance, I think it was sort of so-so. And we'll come on to Rashford in a little bit. But my hunch is that Southgate starts Foden at left wing.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's going to happen, isn't it? And it's going to be, the conversation will be heading into England's first game of the Euros, who starts, Rashford or Foden? That is not a conversation.
That's not right now. No,
and it won't be within the season, mate. Like, for me, like, there is just no comparison across this season, not even just this season, just in terms of trusting someone to produce the same level of skill and performance as Foden every single time. And you know, like when Rashford scored that goal on Sunday, it's like, okay, so he said, what is he, back me great, doubt me even better, and then he scores the best goal of his life. It's like, but that's one moment where a ball has fallen to you in the perfect circumstances. You've caught it an absolute peach, don't get
it's
me
a great
wrong.
Strike. Yeah,
it's a great strike. But what does he follow it up with? A moment when he was going through on goal. If he'd have backed that up by taking the right touch with his head to put him clear on goal and put Man United further ahead, then I'd be like, bang, like Rashford is actually back. He's a bit unlucky, sure. But he still doesn't make the most of that other moment that he has within the game. We barely talk about him outside of that moment. And Phil Foden isn't like that. He just isn't like that. And I think that that's what is just so intriguing about this lad. Like, sure, like there have been a few negative stories about Foden too on his way up. But
that all seems to have faded to background noise.
It has faded to background noise. He's managed to keep his personal life private. Whether that changes, who knows? Maybe Rashford's right that he does get special attention when it comes to that. But I've always Foden is very much a lad that has his feet on the ground. I mean, I interviewed Foden a few years back and spent a couple of hours with him, and he was a very quiet lad, very unassuming, but I liked the way that when he came to life in an interview, he was very sure about himself. I think he's just extremely confident. When I was speaking to
on pitch, yeah, 100%.
When I was speaking to the guy that that uncovered him at Man City, who found him as a kid and has been a big part of his life ever since then, he said, "Do you know what I would say about Phil Foden is that he's very much a lad that keeps himself to himself." He said, and he's actually quite like Paul Scholes in that sense. He said, and even when he has massive moments, he doesn't go too far with it. He said, you know, a lot of his life, I've seen him score like goals where he's run the length of the pitch, but rather than have some elaborate celebration, he's just jogged back to the halfway line and got on with the game. Now, obviously, like when he scores the goal yesterday and he's ready to do his crossbow celebration whatever.
Can we just put it out there? This is not ever going to be an iconic celebration. It's not good. Like, shouts out Phil Foden for trying to do his thing, whatever. One, he needs to decide if it's a crossbow or a gun.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that is.
I don't know why he's taking something out of his a quiver to do a sniper rifle celebration. That doesn't make sense. But two, like, it's I don't know. There's not, it feels a bit forced. I don't know. Anyway, whatever. Yeah. It is what it is.
But you say it's not iconic. Dylan did copy it last night. So
maybe
it does become iconic if he scores a few big goals.
I saw people starting to refer to him as the sniper. I was like, nah, I'm not having that. Like, that's not a thing now. We're not going to fill the sniper Foden. That's not how things are going.
But yeah, you know, and I think the other thing that we should address is that, like, throughout the Man City glory years, it hasn't been built around the local lad, has it? You know,
he's had to wait. Not wait for his chance feels wrong, but there is a little bit of vindication in the whole, like, do you remember the entire argument about why isn't he going on loan? He needs to be more of a part of it. He needs to be able to be more consistent. And suddenly we're starting to see that. And it's easy to forget, right, that he's still only 23 years old. This is a player who should be starting to come into his peak now. And that's exactly what we're seeing. And I think it's phenomenal. I think he's been remarkable. In terms of, you know, the questions there from Return J, PFA Player of the Year, every chance, right? Every chance. Because if City go on and win it, then I think he has been the most pivotal player in that scenario. It changes if Liverpool or Arsenal win the league there, a little bit. But those two things, you know, are not completely hand in hand. And Chris saying, given his chances of winning multiple titles, does he have to be considered in the conversation for the Ballon d'Or? If City win multiple titles, then yeah, 100%. And, you know, we talk about Jude Bellingham and Real Madrid. There's a fair chance that there is two English players in the top five of the Ballon d'Or this year, and that's a pretty cool place to be for
him. That's true. But like you say that Foden is young to be hitting his peak. I think we have to remember with Foden, he made his first team debut for City over 6 years ago.
Yeah.
2017, right? So, and given the style of player he is, given that he does use pace at times, he used small movements, all these things, like I do feel like the next couple of years really are going to be the best of Phil Foden. I really just need him to steer clear of injury, obviously, if he's going to maintain having or retain having the same skill set. I feel like in the next 2 years, he could become a remarkable footballer. But for now, this is the season when Kevin De Bruyne and Erling Haaland are expected to be the guys that fire Manchester City to more glory. And the fact that the local lad from Stockport, who's been at Man City his whole life, is in that conversation is testament to Man City and the way that they have groomed him for the top. All those years when we heard about he's not being loaned out, he's staying here and he's watching David Silva night and day, and he will watch him and he will follow him and he'll learn
just
from him.
He's equaled his goals record at City, hasn't he? So that's quite a nice little moment.
Absolutely, mate. And there's all these little parts of the journey that go into make him feel Foden. And yeah, I just hope that for the next couple of years, we continue to see this climb because, as you say, like we are going through a golden era at the moment of English talent. Bellingham, Foden, Kane, Saka, Rice, John Stones, like across that team, incredible talent. Like, can it all be brought together to lead England anywhere? Probably not, but it should. Like, it should, because that is a remarkable set of players.
Yeah, shouts out to John Stones, by the way, because this was another just imperious display. He did everything. He just does a bit of everything. And you know, a man for all seasons in so many ways, but there are few better technical players on the planet. Just the way that you just watch him sometimes and just watch him. And it's just incredible what he does for the City side. Truly a unicorn player. He has been so, so special in his Pep Guardiola side. And nothing but love for the Barnsley Beckenbauer. Unbelievable scenes. Right, let's move on to United quickly. Mark Wilson says, whilst ultimately I expected that result, the way that we got there just leaves a bit of a bad taste in the mouth. I thought we saw both the good and the bad of Erik ten Hag today. Honestly, for most of the first half, I thought ten Hag had the tactics reasonably right. Tried to reduce the space in midfield and force City wide, but as the game wore on, old problems came up yet again. The gaps in the midfield were wide open and we gave up far too many shots. Also offered next to nothing offensively in the second half. Been feeling a little empty watching United recently. Never felt like we'd get anything out of that game. On another day, Rashford nods the ball down better in the 16th minute and is one-on-one with Edison and doesn't completely whiff on the half volley from 6 yards out 5 minutes later. But 27 shots from a team like City almost always ends with them scoring 3+ goals. Shout out Diogo Dalot though, who I thought was excellent and continues to get better. Didn't allow Doku much joy at all. Stuart Johnson says, Manchester United down 3-1, 5 minutes left in the game, standing around watching City possess the ball, tells you everything you need to know about the gulf between the clubs. No question here, just the same old United pulling an all-time underperformers FC showing. And Justin Johnson said, were Ten Hag substitutions the absolute worst? And why is the answer yes?
I mean, the thing is, the United team have gone through the absolute mill. You know, they're exhausted.
He didn't have loads of options, although I do think that moving Lindelof central to put William Kwabala at right back and then Dalot at left back was a very strange manoeuvre.
Yeah, I mean, I'm guessing that, you know, if Johnny Evans can... He's doing well to even get through 70 minutes of a Manchester derby, isn't it? I mean, it's remarkable.
He thought he was coming back for 1 week of pre-season. He's had to play Erling Haaland home and away.
It's absolutely remarkable that he's even able to do this, but... You know, in defence of Ten Hag, he ain't got much choice there but to bring him off if he's done as much as he can in that moment. And he's got to decide, like, how he moves that team around. I mean, what could he have done? You've got barely any options on the bench. The only senior players, really, are Amrabat and Eriksen. You know, Amrabat's obviously eventually come onto the pitch for Kobbie Mainoo, and he's given away the third goal, which sums up Amrabat's time at Man United. It's just been an absolute disaster for him. But I don't really... I don't know what Ten Hag could have done here, because his team aren't good enough to play on the front foot and put Man City under pressure. The only thing I would say is that teams that have had joy out of playing Man City have offered a little bit more. If you think of Chelsea or Tottenham, they got something there, didn't they? And I just think of when, even when you're packed back in your own half,
you've got to have moments
when you're just at least showing a threat
You have to give them a little bit of the fear. They have to be scared that you're going to be able to do something on the break, or because otherwise it becomes an unrelenting sea of pressure.
It wasn't there, was it? It just wasn't there. And that
was a little bit there in the first half. It wasn't there.
Yeah, first half it was, but it wore away. Like second half, 45 minutes camped out against Man City feels like 4 days. Like I can't even imagine how hard it is. And, you know, you're watching the game go on, and even that, you know, obviously that Foden brings it back to 1-1 and 56. I doubt there were any of us that thought that was how the game was going to end.
No.
And it was just like, when does City get that breakthrough? It doesn't come until the last 10 minutes, but it feels like same old, and that is so deflating for a United player. To be honest, the fact they've even come out 3-1 in the end is pretty good, because sometimes that goal goes and it ends up like 5-1.
It flatters United a little bit, doesn't it?
A little bit.
That's kind of wild.
Obviously, like, there's been big moments like Haaland missing his sitter and all the rest of it that are strange little quirks of the match itself. But I don't know what more you could really expect from this United team. He obviously went with a bit of a different setup by the fact that he started with McTominay.
I haven't seen a Christmas tree in a while as a formation. Yeah,
it was a weird one. It was a weird one, but again, he's got to try and come up with something, because what he's doing recently hasn't worked. But ultimately, he's limited. Now, the problem is that, you know, Ten Hag has helped build this team. He has had an influence on the signings, on the style of play and the philosophy. And if you're Ineos, it's just another match which you'll be like, well, were we actually competitive in that game? That's what I would be looking at today. What are we thinking coming out of that game? And can we trust this guy going forward? I think more than ever that I'd be looking at that Liverpool FA Cup quarterfinal and being like, if we are not competitive in that fixture, cannot at least rattle Liverpool and take them to the very limits of this fixture to make it through to the FA Cup semis, then I don't think he's our guy. I really think that it's getting to that point now where Ineos need to know before the end of the season if they're actually going to stick with Ten Hag. And while I don't want to criticise his game plan too much from this specific one, in the end, it is same old, and unfortunately, he's going to end up being the victim of the results. And yeah, there'll be a clear out in the summer, and you look through this squad and you're thinking, well, Casemiro won't be there anyway, Amrabat won't be there, Eriksen probably won't be there, you know, Varane probably won't be there. But you've got to trust the rebuild too. And I just feel that, like, Ineos might want to, you know, the Graham Potter links, there's reason for those links. It's because they want to find someone that they trust themselves, and a character and a personable person that they relate to more. And I think that's where all that comes from.
Yeah, I mean, I saw what Ten Hag said afterwards. He said, we defended brilliantly out of possession. We were close to winning, or at least getting a draw here. It was a good performance overall. The players gave everything. And I saw Sab tweet yesterday saying, managers just say stuff. Whether any of it's true or not is besides the point. And I thought
defended himself, aren't they?
But 100%, I was like, was it a good performance, Eric? Like, there were moments in it where you were like, okay, United have done well in these small periods, but I don't think you were ever close to winning or getting a draw at this point. I mean, we talk about, you know, yes, they'll go, okay, they scored a goal to go ahead with 10 minutes to go and, you know, want to seal it late on. But I don't think anyone watching that has gone, oh, this has been a good United performance. And so it is, you know,
you can't enjoy it, can you? Like, even if you're a United fan, like, beyond the elation of the goal where you go absolutely mental, obviously, you're not enjoying every minute beyond that. And like, we've, you know, as Fulham fans, we've been in games where, you know, you score early against a bigger club, and and
hanging on for dear life.
You hang up, you dread every minute that follows, and like.
But that's not. That's not. This is United.
They're, yeah, but they're not. They're not the Man United of old, are they? This is what I'm trying to get at. And United are actually feeling now what it feels to be like a smaller, not quite Fulham, but you know, it's not a million miles away from what we've been through.
This is how Fulham would set up against Manchester City. This is how Brentford would set up against Manchester City. Now, whether that's right or wrong is a different question, because you have to try and play a game plan that's going to play to your own strengths. And, you know, as we said in the first half, and as Mark Poole pointed out, you know, there is an element there where you go, okay, we're going to try and play to our strengths and try and nullify City's. But if you can't execute that game plan for 90 minutes, then, you know, where are you actually at? So it's a strange one, but I think it's, I thought the United fans, I can't imagine any United fans are sitting there going, yeah, I'm really pleased with what's gone on there. And, you know, you will want to at least come out of these games. It's never obviously nice to lose a derby. But if you lose and you go, okay, we put in everything, they're just a better side than us. That's one thing. There's another thing, not really having any, you know, sense that at any point you were going to get anything out of the game. And maybe that's doing a disservice to City's quality. But it just felt like, okay, what is the plan from the 45th minute onwards? And there just didn't really seem to be one.
Yeah, most fans probably left it 2-1, to be honest. I saw there's quite a few gaps in the away end at the end. And that would have been my moment to go to. You do not want to be hanging around for the fallout of Man City celebrating a big win. And for City, it's more relief than anything, isn't it? Because they know they're the better team, but they also know they've been victims of negative results against United, even in these years when United haven't been at their best. So it's kind of a no win for them, because they're expected to win. And if they don't, then they're baited for it. So it's probably a weird day to be a Man City fan. And it's probably a day that you actually dread, even though you're expecting to win. And then afterwards, you're like, oh, thank goodness for that. We didn't let it go. But yeah, an interesting game. And obviously, it sets everything up very nicely now for what is to come. And it sets up that fixture at Anfield next. Liverpool v Manchester City is just, oh, it's absolutely golden, isn't it? As we sit right now, Liverpool top of the tree on 63 points. Man City second on 62 points. They've played the same number of games. Liverpool have a slightly better goal difference. But that match is just going to be one. It could be one for the ages. It really could. Like, it's a fascinating fixture that really will have a big say on who wins the league.
Well, thank you so much for listening to that bit of our post box. We hope that you enjoyed it. And the rest of this episode, as a long one, it had a lot of ground to cover. We discussed Liverpool's late winner at Nottingham Forest and the controversy that surrounds it. We talked a little about West Ham, about Everton, about Spurs, about Rodrigo Muniz at Fulham as well. Then we went on to Europe discussing all the controversy at Mestalla as Real Madrid had a late winner disallowed. We also discussed the Bundesliga relegation battle, some madness going on at the top of the Primeira table in Portugal. We talked about Inter Miami's big win in MLS, the madness at the top and bottom of the Championship, AFC Wimbledon's huge win at Plough Lane over MK Dons, and what's going on in League 2, as well as plenty of other topics. We'd love you to come and get involved. If you want more from us, there's a link in the description to that episode over on our Patreon. Please come and see if you like it. But for now, thank you so much for listening. We will see you on Wednesday for the main episode. Take it easy, gang. Peace. Final seconds of the game. A chance to score, and the chance has gone begging. If your business's commerce platform keeps missing the target on golden opportunities, get the MVP you deserve. Get Shopify. Shopify is the commerce platform revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. Whether you're a garage entrepreneur or IPO ready, Shopify is the only tool that you need to start, run, and grow your business without the struggle. Shopify puts you in control of every sales channel. So whether you're selling signed football boots from Shopify's in-person POS system, or you're vending vintage shirts on Shopify's all-in-one e-commerce platform, you are covered. And once you've reached your audience, Shopify has the internet's best converting checkout to help you turn them from browsers to buyers. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is truly a global force, powering Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across over 170 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ranks, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ranks to take your business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/ranks.